Okay, so we're ready to go.
Hey, what's up? This is Michael Render, also known as Killer Mike, and I'm chilling with one of my heroes right here, sitting in Nina Turner.
It is about passion, persistence, justice, dreams, insistence. Lots of people from all walks of life. I want people to see themselves in these stories.
We the people.
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 We are the people.
We the people.
I am in Omaha, Nebraska, in a hotel room, thinking about my interview with Michael Render. Better known as Killer Mike, my dear friend Killer Mike. And we met on the campaign for Senator Bernie Sanders as he was running for president. And I remember the first speech that I heard Killer Mike as he introduced Senator Sanders, and he laid out why he was supporting Senator Sanders. And he said he thought about the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and all that he stood for. And he lined up what Reverend King stood for and what Senator Sanders stood for, and they were very much in line.
What I'm talking about today is the Martin King post the Washington March, Martin King present the war on poverty, Martin King against the war machine that uses your sons and your nephews to go to other lands and murder. I'm talking about a revolutionary.
And he was so inspirational.
I'm here because working class and poor people deserve a chance at economic freedom. And yes, if you work 40 hours a week, you should not be in poverty. That's why I'm here.
And talking about a need for social justice, talking about a need to care for the folks who have been left behind, marginalized communities in this country. And that Senator Sanders certainly had the street cred, if you will, in terms of being that kind of public servant, not just half of his public career, but all of his public career, he has been on the front line.
Because he, unlike any other candidate, said, I would like to restore the Voting Rights Act.
And that was it. It was just so exciting to hear a rapper, you know, his stage name is Killer Mike, a rapper just being that concerned about what is happening in this country and willing to step out.
Unlike any other candidate in my life, he says that education should be free for every citizen of this country.
Killer Mike and civil rights and Bernie Sanders. You might think that one of those things don't fit, but they all fit together, and here's why.
So I was the underling to some older boys who were really, really dope rappers. They're still friends to this day. But, you know, I was a little homie that looked up to him and would accompany them to rap battles and stuff and just kind of hang out and smile, look at my friend. Kind of like how Celie looked at Shug Avery when she was singing. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And my friends had won so many contests. They had, you know, you develop some opposition. And there was just a group of guys from other crews and stuff. I mean, that essentially were like, we're going to sabotage. All of us are going to rap against these guys. And somebody's going to beat them. And my guys, you know, at that point, they knew they were good. They were, you know, people were offering them, you know, record deals and stuff. And they were just like, we're not interested in doing it anymore. So I showed up with their DJ, and I battled the guys. Like, it was like a Rakim round. I battled seven MCs, seven more MCs. And at some point, a guy, a DJ named Double D, stood up and was just like, yo, this kid's a killer. Like, he's killing y'all. Y'all shut up. And that ended the battle. And, you know, my nickname is Nup in my family. And Skunk, or in my neighborhood. My nickname was always Skunk, so they just called me Skunk. But after that, no one ever called me Skunk anymore. It was Killer. Like, who's that kid? He's like, that's kid. That's Mike. Yo, that's Killer Mike, the kid he was telling you about last weekend. After that, my rap name wasn't Skunk anymore. People just called me Killer Mike.
I'm sure that's a beautiful thing. There's a big difference between being called Killer Mike and Skunk, that is for sure. But but it symbolizes that you were at the top of your game, you know, beast. I mean, the best. I mean, that's, you know, on the opposite side.
Enthusiastic 16-year-old.
No, I love it. I love it. And I'm so glad that you are, you know, sharing that. So Michael, when you think about, you know, kind of the environment that we're in right now, it is heavy in many ways. It's heavy socially, politically, economically. Yeah. It's heavy for a lot of people from all walks of life, just really heavy. Can you think about, you know, how do we talk about what is happening in the 21st century as juxtaposition to the 20th century and some of the movement leaders? It was heavy in the 20th century, too. You know, I remember, you know, one of my favorite singers, you know, talking about "Mama, Mama, there's too many of you crying." You know, Marvin Gaye.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
brother, Marvin, brother, brother, there's too many of you dying. And in that song, he asked the question, "What's going on?" So I pose that question to you, Killer Mike. What's going on?
Well, I don't think times are always as heavy as we think they are in the moment. And what I mean by that is I grew up in the 80s as a young child. Pretty perilous times and times in terms of joblessness with factories and stuff leaving America. And with that said, I didn't grow up in the 70s like my dad doing OPEC and things like that, which was harder and even harder for his parents. So even though things are heavy, they're not heavy without hope. I think hope remains. I'm very hope-filled to see so many people work across cultural lines, race lines, sex lines for the betterment of all in the name of social justice. I'm hopeful that even at our worst as a country, we figure out how to do some of the best things, and I see moments of goodness in them. So I never lose way of hope. But what I will say now is, since I believe all politics is local in terms of the heavy feel you may get from the sense of politics, from a national perspective, people feel like the more progressive voice is not there, didn't win, or even, you know, people who are more centrist in terms of Democrats saying that, you know, we didn't get it. I say on a local level, I've been very enthused to see so many local progressives get elected. And I would like to see more progressive ideas locally. If you want to see schools be different, attack it locally as a problem. You know, my theory is maybe we should take the next 5 to 10 years with our boys. We should start focusing on our boys that don't necessarily want to go to college, don't know what they want to do. Maybe we should focus on getting African-American boys and working-class boys, period, in a skilled labor positions, because these are going to be the jobs the next 15 and 20 years that help this country grow, that will begin to make sure that these young men can become family leaders in terms of being husbands and fathers and not just single fathers and single mothers out there, that can make sure that they have a job that pays even if they want to further their education. We have to, on a local level, stay active and remain active politically, making sure that as progressives, we're progressing.
Totally agreed. And I love how you just made that really simple, that heavy, not heavy without hope. That is very profound. Yeah. That's a T-shirt, too, by the way. Not heavy without hope. That is a very powerful. And you talked about the cultural lines. And speaking of cultural lines, I hear you talk so fondly of a lady that I have admired from afar. I remember in the 90s, she came to my community college, Cuyahoga Community College in the great state of Cleveland, Ohio. And she was talking about race and the dynamics of race and racism and power dynamics, and telling the story about how she did what is known as the blue-eyed, brown-eyed experiment, where when Dr. King was assassinated, she was teaching at a suburban school, I believe, that was all white. And she struggled with, you know, the students, as she tells it, came in and they were talking about heavy, you know, not understanding how to interpret what happened. And she utilized this experiment to teach her students about what racism and discrimination can do psychologically. And I remember it was an uproar in the school. I mean, some folks wanted her fired, as she tells the story. But you and her, have a friendship. Can you talk to us about Jane Elliott? And a lot of people might not really know who she is.
Yeah, for those who don't know who she is, Google and YouTube Jane Elliott.
I had no way to explain to my third graders in all-white, all-Christian Riceville, Iowa, what Martin Luther King Jr. was demonstrating against. I had no way to explain to them the hatred that white people had for that man. And so I decided, since we were studying an Indian unit at the time, and our lesson plan for the next day was to learn the Sioux Indian prayer that says, "Oh Great Spirit, keep me from ever judging a man until I've walked a mile in his moccasins," I decided that the next morning, if my students didn't understand what we were talking about when we discussed this horror, that not only would I teach them that prayer, I would arrange to have it answered for them. And I went into my classroom the next morning and I split my group according to the color of their eyes.
You think you know how that would feel to be judged by the color of your skin?
Yeah.
I don't. Do you think you do? No, I don't think you'd know how that felt unless you had been through it, would you? It might be interesting to judge people today by the color of their eyes. Would you like to try this?
Yeah!
Sounds like fun, doesn't it? Since I'm the teacher and I have blue eyes, I think maybe the blue-eyed people should be on top the first day.
It was so horrifying for her to see a champion who wasn't just fighting for black people and the rights of black people, but fighting for us as black people, but for greater humanity, the poor, the working poor, Fred Hampton called the proletariat, the people, saw him to be slaughtered, saw him to be killed. It affected her in a way for the rest of her life, and I believe she's 85 years old now, has been spent making sure that his dream is furthered, because people need to realize that race essentially is something that's made up. Cultures are not made up. Cultures are what we have. You know, we really are culturally different. But race is something that was made up about 500 years ago. It was made up at the behest of a Spanish monarchy, an oligarchy, and European oligarchy that needed free labor in order to spread an empire, right? We know this. Because we know this, we have an opportunity to opt out of our racial stereotypes and thoughts and to opt out of systems that support it. We act as though we don't. And her blue-eyed, brown-eyed experiment shows this firsthand. She tells a group of white people in the room, hey, how many of you guys know how African Americans are treated in this country, black people are treated, people acknowledge? Then she says, based on that, how many of you guys would want to essentially trade places or be black? No one raises their hands. And she says, that says you know something is wrong and you're not willing to do anything about it. Because it's been accepted that this is the system. And she counteracts that and gives ways of counteracting that. And I believe that as a country, if we took her and her curriculum as a model, we could probably wipe away with racism in our country in 8 years short, 20 years long. But within a child's lifetime, racism could end. I found Jane on the internet. I reached out to her. I flew out to meet her. I fellowshipped with her and her family since then. Her family is as mixed and diverse as any American utopian community you would want it to be. She walks in and talks in and lives what she says, and she's one of my heroes that I have the pleasure and the honor of being able to call on the phone and just say hello. And I'm glad that, you know, the universe has given me an opportunity to fellowship with her.
I agree with that, Mike, and I'm looking forward to meeting her. She is a wealth of knowledge, just a walking, living embodiment of what social justice looks like. And she took the slings and arrows as a third grade teacher, but I'm sure she taught her students a lesson that they will never, ever forget. People in this country understand intrinsically, they understand that there is a burden, a heavy burden to blackness, you know, in this country and also in this world, and that there's a price to it.
I think you just perfectly said it. It's a burden. You know, a burden doesn't stop you from doing something. It just makes it a little harder.
That's
right. You know what I mean? And I don't mean that in a passe kind of way. It's a little harder. Now, I mean, it could be incredibly difficult to start campaigns and businesses. It can be incredibly difficult to get the quality of education you deserve. It can be incredibly difficult to not have a negative interaction with a policeman. Those are the burdens, right? Those are the burdens that racism through systems have kind of brought us, right?
Yes.
But we can overcome those things individually. Meaning individually, if you're an African-American male, for instance, right, they get a big blunt of the burden. You can make sure you don't have children out of wedlock, because we know that start to involve you with government too early by way of child support, things of that nature, that puts you on the negative side of the courts already. You're not ready for that as a parent. You're still growing up yourself. So we should make sure our boys are knowing to first date a girl, woo a girl. When you start making love, having sex, you have to take your birth control as seriously as we teach girls to.
That's right. If
you get in the fatherdom too early, that's going to increase your burden. We can teach our boys, for instance, that you have to further your education. It doesn't have to be college, but you have to have a skill people don't want to pay for. So if you can build a wall, you can paint a house. If you can work metal, you can do those things. The other things, we got to start to value being able to be employed. I travel the world. And there are places where a job is like gold. You know, there are places in the world where black people value jobs in the way our grandparents did, because it gives them an opportunity to partake in the economic system and to begin to build wealth. And we have to start doing that, right? but it shouldn't be so burdensome to. If your name is Kareem or Hakeem, it shouldn't be more difficult for you to get a job.
That's right.
I think we could do a better job in terms of understanding economics and politics, making sure we're supporting people like you, make sure we're supporting black banks and black businesses. And I think that we can help to change the fabric of this country and the world. You know?
That's it. And just be engaged and know that, you know, we do have the power collectively and as individuals, we have the power. And
absolutely.
And you got to have some skin in the game. So, and speaking of skin in the game, so not heavy without hope. You know, I'm going to carry that with me for a very long time. That's the new slogan.
I hear that in one of your speeches on the smile.
Not heavy without hope. You know I'm going to say it. But you really are someone that thinks deeply. You give back to the community. You lift. You talk about social justice, racial justice. You talk about the entire spectrum, the whole gamut. And speaking of that, so this song, Black Power, White Powder. That's a, you know, that's a tongue twister right there. Can you?
Yeah, it is.
Break that down.
Black power, black power, white powder, white powder, black power, black power, white powder, white powder, black powder.
Well,
black
we have post Nixon been involved in this country, been involved in what was called the drug war. We don't know this to be true or false, but one of Nixon's aides, we don't know if he said it, but one of his aides that died. It was later pulled out of an old interview where he said that the drug war was purposely targeting blacks and hippies. This drug war has destroyed parts of the black community and the working and working poor communities. It has destroyed poor white and rural communities. So I don't care if you're from the trailer parks or the projects, the drug war has been harmful to you. That has always been a terrible blight on our policy in this country, and it's something that as marijuana legalization inches forward, I hope changes. All too often in American history, we celebrate the outlaw. We celebrate Jesse James. We celebrate John Dillinger. We celebrate Al Capone. We celebrate outlaws. And in the African American community, the outlaws, just like in church a lot of times, just like in terms of your history books, the outlaws don't look like you. So we'll look at a movie like Goodfellas and say this is one of the greatest movies ever seen, ever written. And then you'll look at a movie like, you know, Superfly, yeah, it's all right. You know,
right.
We have to, I believe, as a community, celebrate all of that. So as a rapper, that was my opportunity to say that some of the men who survived the drug war did not find themselves as murderous kingpins who killed communities. What they found them, they didn't find themselves murdered. They took whatever they made and they little first flash, they started gas stations, trucking companies. They started things that the same way that my friends who have other ethnicities would say, well, you know, my uncle, my mother's brother was in the mafia. That's how he. My other friends would say, you know, my uncle was a gangster. He dealt in diamonds. Like, the same way my friends can proudly and quietly tell me that, this record gave an opportunity to me to say to those men who are now 50, 60, some 70 years old, that did do a great crime to actually escape a life of poverty. And, you know, I got to take the chance, not even my book, but Jay Prince of Rap-A-Lot Records, I saw him speak yesterday. He has a book on the Art and Science of Respect out now. And he talked about being locked in a closet in 1988 and making a deal with God, saying, if you take me out of the streets, I promise you I will use my vigor and my zeal that I use in these streets in a legal way in music, and I will never return to this type of behavior again. After that, he's hired hundreds of people who were out of jail, who were felons, who have turned their life around. That's black power, white powder. That means I've taken the lessons that I've learned from the streets, from this inglorious thing, from this crime and this illegality, and I have taken myself into a legal and legitimate place, and I transformed my life and became a citizen within this community that helps this community. I have done that through music. 2 Chainz has done that, who's featured on the record. He now owns, as he said in his rap, 2 buildings on Peter Street, daycares, homes in different places. My wife and I own a series of barbershops. We own real estate, and we've transformed. What I'm saying is, let's not write these young men off because they have entrepreneurial minds. Let's direct them in their minds in a different way. Let's celebrate the men who escaped that evil game. And let's make sure that retroactively, as these marijuana laws are passed, let's make sure that these men can come home and participate in the industry that their illegality helped build and turn into a legal business now.
That's right. So, you know, just hearing you tell that story and really help, you know, give the clear picture of what the song really means, the word that comes to mind for me is redemption. You know, that people can be redeemed, that as human beings that we can be redeemed and do so many great things like you have and others. And so, not heavy without hope. This is our theme today.
Not heavy without hope.
So, Michael, if you had to just say to, you know, anybody that is feeling, and I'm not even just talking about the political realm, you know, life is hard out here for different people, whether you live in Appalachia, whether it's opioid crisis to a criminal justice system that only sees black and brown people as more criminal than others, and or poor people, too, because we can't leave out our poor white sisters and brothers. Society that really has pretty much erased our Native American sisters and brothers, you know, even still to this day. Or just, you know, the young single mama or single father, for that matter, or the college student that is trying to struggle just to make it every day. The child that has to walk, you know, from their house and try to make it to the schoolhouse. People really are struggling just differently.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, what words would you say to somebody just to remind them that for every day that we can get up, somebody said, if you can look up, you can get up. That life is worth it, and that you can be that change. You can be that difference no matter what stage in your life you are at. What would you say to them?
Well, I'll say to them first, after I just left a great barbershop debate over me and a brother arguing about economics and spirituality. And us coming to the agreement that first and foremost, let's recognize, man, that you are a spiritual being.
Yes.
You know, I often deal within the hard tenements of capitalism. Where are we economically? How do we fix that? But money doesn't fix everything. As we can tell, Kate Spade, God bless the dead, just committed suicide. And not a day or two after, God bless the dead, Anthony Bourdain did. These people were rich. These people were famous. These people had a claim. And these people had a burden so heavy they couldn't see their own hope. And God bless them. And I hope that pain toils no more with them. But I want people out there, as a son of someone whose mother attempted suicide in front of him. I lost my mother last year. But about 20 years prior, she attempted suicide in front of me and my sister. She survived the encounter, and she told us, you know, I'm sorry. I was just having a bad day. And it was such a simple statement, but it was such a big statement. You never know when the straw that can break the camel's back is going to come floating out the wind and laying right there on the camel and just break it down.
That's right.
I want to tell everyone out there that may be without hope, that may not feel hopeful or even feel hopeless, that hope resounds. It's all about you. Get outside, walk, engage someone. If you're really feeling down, go help the homeless, help the battered, the sick, the shut in. Visit those that could need you most. If you feel worthless, go to an old folks home. Ask how may I volunteer. You have to understand that we are all interconnected. And as weak as you may feel, you're powerful and you are needed by someone. You have to know that there is a grand and universal creator, no matter what you call that. And it has put you as a spiritual being in this human vessel. And you are to do good while you're here, because good awaits for you on the other side of that. People need to know and understand that there is someone somewhere that knows, cares, and thinks about you. You're thought about, you're loved, you're cared for. And until you can get that every morning in the mirror by looking in it, find those people and allow them to give that to you. Don't run for them. Don't run from them. Don't try to be strong in front of them. Give them that. And if you don't have anyone, don't have a problem seeking out help. Don't have a problem seeking out light. Don't have a problem fellowshipping with people. It may be hard. So if you are an addict, get in the class with other addicts who are beating it. If spiritually you're down, get in a spiritual circle where people can help you understand. You know, if you're just tired of eating Doritos on the edge of the bed, meet me in the gym in the morning, because I'm in there sweating with you, man. But you cannot get to the place of hopelessness where you take your bold and beautiful self off the face of the earth. You can't let yourself get to the point of hopelessness where you remain apathetic in the face of real hope and for you being a change agent within your own life and the life of your community. I believe that while we're here our short years, you know, humans don't live very long, 60, 70, 80, 90 years if we're lucky. We have an opportunity to advance this world in ways that we haven't even thought of yet. And that only helps us when people understand their love. So let's make sure that someone else understands that today. Let's make sure every morning you're waking up, you know, trying to fall in love with yourself more and more.
Amen to that, Michael. And, you know, somebody once said that we can't control the birth date you know, what comes before the dash or after the dash, but we can control the dash. And that is what you're talking about, that everybody has purpose. Titles are good, but purpose is better. No, not heavy without hope. So thank you so much, Michael, for being on We the People today. I want people to know that they can find you, though, on Twitter, at Killer Mike on Twitter.
Yeah, I am. I'm on Twitter and Instagram. Simply as Killer Mike. That's Killer with the ER. And, you know, I want to tell people, if you get through Atlanta or you go to a Hawks game while you're here, please stop by. My wife and I own a series of barbershops called the Swag Shop, the Shave, Wash, and Groom Shop. Stop by there. Go to theswagshop.com. Check us out. And love and respect to all. Thank you so much for having me on this.
Oh, amen. Thank you. Thank you, Michael, so much.
All right, peace.
Everything giving people get a turkey because the government's looking at them like they ain't worth it. Politicians sending niggas out of prison while they acting like their reputation clean as the church. Not heavy without hope. Those words that Killer Mike spoke have really just weighed on my mind and my heart, because in that statement is an acknowledgement that things are really heavy right now, you know, especially in light of what's really been front and center in our face about how our United States government under the Trump administration is treating refugees or migrants, if you will, migrants trying to come into our country. And many of these people are trying to escape situations in their own native land that are untenable. And it's not just that the policies that this administration has taken up to the extreme, it's not just that, but it's what they're doing to children. You know, I would like to think as a country that we hold two groups in very high regard. That is our children and our elders. And, you know, at any moment in time, what is happening to the folks who are coming from other countries to seek refuge here, that could be us. That could be us. That could be somebody that we love. And so it is always vitally important for us to reflect and try to put ourselves in somebody else's shoes. So when Killer Mike said, not heavy without hope, that said to me that we must acknowledge the weight of this moment, the disappointment of this moment, but also know that brighter days are coming, that things will change. And the reason why they will change is not just because we hope they will change. They will change because we will take that hope and lace it with action. And that is what we're doing in this country. And so people are lifting their voice, even people, you know, who may not necessarily be on the same political, ideological side as we are, but people are speaking up about this from all sides of the political spectrum. You know, religious right folks are speaking out and saying, you know, hey, President Trump, what you're doing at that border is not right. It is not right from a humanity standpoint. You know, laws are one thing, and we definitely have to do something in this country about immigration reform. We should do it in a humane way. But just saying that something is, you know, just dealing with this just from a legal perspective just doesn't quite cut it. It really is about humanity. So if any of us could just close our eyes and visualize, just pretend that that was you or somebody that you loved, and that their child or your child was torn from your arms, how would you feel? That feeling that you have right now at this moment, I want you to use that feeling to give you empathy for the folks who are coming here to try to find a better life. And after all, that's what we're all trying to do, whether we're migrants at the border or we're mothers and fathers working every day, or whether we're grandparents tucking our children in at night. We are all trying to find a better way, a better life. This is what living is all about. We always want better, and we always should strive to have better, but we can never leave a sister or a brother behind. So all in this journey of ours, we must remember that it is always good to lift as we climb. So yes, we are heavy, but not without hope. Because when conscious-minded people are determined to come together and put a little extra on their ordinary, extraordinary things happen. I believe that, and I hope you do too. We the People is produced by Large Media. That's LARJ Media in partnership with the Young Turks. I'm Nina Turner.